I am at the 2019 AI and Analytics Conference held by Insurance Nexus in Chicago, Illinois, and I am with, what is your name?
Oh, my name is Jeroen Morrenhoff.
Jeroen, and what is your name?
Jim Murphy.
And you are with Friss. What is Friss?
So Friss is a fraud analytics company, so we're at the analytics conference here, obviously, and what we try to help carriers with is to detect fraud, but even more important, to prevent fraud from entering the book of business.
Okay. And how do you do that?
The essence is it's an AI platform that leverages the data of our customers, the data, external data that we have, and we have a hybrid model that basically determines a Friss score. The Friss score basically determines the best next action on a claim or an application, and that's how we help about 159 customers at the moment in 34 countries.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I'm mostly interested in fraud, not committing it, okay, but finding it, rooting it out.
Yeah.
But I'm mostly interested on the underwriting side. What are the types of tools that Friss can provide from an underwriting perspective as a submission comes in? What are the additional data points that what does the Friss score provide me?
Well, it provides kind of a view of the person who's trying to get the policy.
Or company,
correct. Yeah, we also have commercial line screening. So it's really looking at that particular person or company to determine if that's someone you want to do business with. Also helps to identify any risks associated with that either individual or business.
Yep. Okay. Why did you start the company?
So like many of the people at Friss, I've been in insurance for over 20 years, and I love the industry. I came in the industry from consulting, management consulting, and at the time I was doing, working for my own consulting firm, and I spoke to a lot of chief claims and chief underwriting officers, and I asked them, okay, what are you doing about fraud? And they basically said nothing. We want to do something about it. We said we're going to do something about it, but it's just impossible. It's part of the industry. I have a computer science background, AI background, and I thought, okay, let's see, together with my co-founder Christian van Leeuwen, if we can solve this problem. And that was 12 years ago, and now we're here.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And you are a New Englander?
I am a New Englander.
And you are a Red Sox fan?
I am very much a Red Sox fan.
And you are a Patriots fan?
Big time.
And
go Pats.
That would make you one of the best people in the world.
Absolutely.
Are you a Patriots fan?
Nope.
Let me guess, you're a soccer fan.
I'm totally into soccer, so I'm Dutch by origin. So I moved into Chicago actually 8 months ago to open up our North American branch and to make sure that we're successful not only in Europe but also in North America. And I am getting to learn the American game. So I'm actually this week I'm going to see a Cubs game. Went to the Bears. I'm close to Northwestern, so I did Northwestern game, but I don't know the Red Sox, and I could not see how they compete with the Patriots, and I know they're in different competitions. That's what I know. That's the level
okay,
I'm at.
Okay, so as a foreigner coming to this country, out of the American sports that you have seen, which one do you like the best?
So far I've found American football to be the most strategic and quick, but I don't want my kids, I brought three kids here, I don't want to have them to play it, but in order to watch it, I think it's very interesting, the speed and the possibilities and the strategies behind it, where baseball takes a little bit too long for me, and I didn't do enough basketball. So yeah, that's the honest answer. And our business is Honest Insurance, so we are direct and honest. That's what we do.
Yeah. So they are honest. On the banner it says Friss, the global standard for honest insurance. So they're honest about insurance and honest about sports. Jeroen, Jim, thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm going to listen to your podcast. I just subscribed.
So we have a new subscriber now.
Yeah.
You're going to listen every week.
Every week.
Do you have any long trips planned?
I do, yeah. So I travel regularly to Europe, obviously. And
okay.
So give me
a tip. We have 150 plus episodes.
Wow.
So I would queue them all up.
Yeah.
It'll take several trips for you to kind of digest them all. But I would start at the present and move backwards.
Okay, but I love podcasts, so I'm going to do it. Thanks.
Okay. Jeroen, Jim, thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Nick.
Okay, back at the 2019 Insurance Nexus Insurance AI and Analytics Conference. Who am I speaking with?
Charles Duga of Element AI.
And what is Element AI?
Element AI is an enterprise software company, and we build AI-based software products for our clients, the insurance companies in particular. And we also operate in other verticals. That's banking, asset management, and on the supply chain side as well.
Okay, so AI is a big topic these days. Can you give folks that might be listening to this struggling to understand what AI is? What is AI?
Yes, so the way we see it is AI is our software tools that are capable of learning by themselves, looking at data in previous data. And so they will learn patterns, they will learn behaviors, they will learn different things from looking at the previous data. And that's how we define AI, because the definition of AI has shifted in the last decades.
It
has kind of evolved. It really meant something much broader in the past, and now our people are more defining AI in a
sensitive
more narrow,
to it. Yeah.
In a more narrow fashion.
Yeah.
So nowadays.
So if I as a metaphor, as a mental model, just equated AI with learning.
Yes.
It's code that learns.
Code that learns from data. Yes.
Okay. Can you give me an example? I was at the VIP breakfast this morning, so I caught a little bit of that. So I was very impressed with some of the applications that you're trying to implement the learning aspect of it. Yeah. Can you give an example or two of where you've been successfully able to bring AI to something that's moving the needle?
Yes. So one example that was discussed is in underwriting, for example, you have a lot of business rules that are encoded into the systems, mm-hmm. and they will sometimes become outdated as the market shifts. And so in that context, you need to update these business rules. So rather than having to manually go and update these business rules, the AI can learn from the actions of the underwriters to understand that this rule or this other rule are updated, and then it should update it and adapt to the new situation.
And the alternative to that is a bunch of offsite meetings every other year or so to wonder like, hey, we should go through our underwriting guidelines to see if they're keeping up with market conditions.
Exactly. And then when you talk to some insurers, will have hundreds of these business rules, because you have to have some for certain specific jurisdictions, every line of business, and so on and so forth. The types of products that you have. So it ramps up pretty quickly.
My guess is AI probably saves several trees per company in terms of paper that has to go into some manual binder. You know, like I just truly envision that there are binders full of paper that have all of these rules. Well, I mean, they have to. A lot of times they have to send them to insurance regulators and
correct.
And things like that.
Yes, it could help in that regard, yes.
What is your background? How did Element AI get started?
So Element AI was founded in October 2016, so we're 2.5 years old, mm-hmm. roughly. The company was founded by serial entrepreneur Jean-François Gagné, who's the CEO of the company, and with Joshua Benjo, who's a well-known researcher in deep learning. And the mission of the company is really to democratize AI and to bring products that, again, allow people to work smarter by updating or automating certain tasks and enhancing their work and supporting them in different decisions that they're making. And so we're now already 500 employees, and the growth was fueled by a Series A of funding, round of funding of $102 million. That we closed in June 2017.
Wow.
So, yes.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. I wasn't there then, but thanks.
Puts a lot of pressure on the company, I'm sure.
Like, yes.
You got to produce now.
Absolutely. You got to deliver. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you scan out and view the insurance industry itself, I'm sure there's like immediate low-hanging fruit that you came in and were just like, these are things you can knock off immediately. Can you name like a few of those?
Of course, there's lots of manual processes in underwriting and claims. That's where we see that a lot of time-consuming tasks, manual tasks, repetitive tasks are being conducted. And in that context, we can bring AI, and these are the low-hanging fruits you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So automation of processes is an area where AI can provide some big gains, and ROIs are easy to measure.
Yeah.
For these engagements.
Yeah. There are a lot of folks that are fearful of AI. You probably, I would guess when you get into a company, there are a lot of folks that might want to put up a barrier.
Yeah.
To prevent you from getting too far, because it could mean they think it could mean their job.
Yeah.
What do you say to people like?
Well, it's similar to other technologies that have been changing the work of different people. So computers have changed how people work. Digitization is changing a lot of the role, different roles. So AI is also going to be changing the roles. But we still see that there's going to be a need for underwriters. It's just that their work will be less focused on tedious tasks, repetitive event data entry, and more into leveraging their understanding and their true common sense when difficult cases come on the table.
Yeah, they don't have to lose their jobs.
They don't have to lose their jobs.
It's a benefit.
The way I see it is that they should see themselves as sitting on top of these technologies, including AI itself, because AI currently is very narrow in its capabilities, so it has to be trained for very, very specific tasks. And if you try to take that AI and do something else, it'll just be a wreck.
Yeah.
And so it has very limited capabilities. What you have to see, people have to understand that common sense that we take for granted is actually something that's extremely difficult to encode in a
common
computer.
Common sense isn't so common.
Yes, exactly.
And where are you based out of?
We're based in Montreal. That's our main, headquarter. And then we have a big office in Toronto as well. And we have satellite offices in London, Seoul, and Singapore. And that's mainly driven, Seoul and Singapore are mainly driven by our Series A, where we had a big support, financial support, and that's why we opened these two offices. In London, our office is dedicated to AI for good. So, for example, working with ONGs and organization to help them benefit from AI as well.
Yep. So, which sport do you prefer more, hockey or curling?
Definitely hockey, but curling can be a lot of fun too.
What's your team?
The Habs. It used to be the Nordiques, but they moved to Denver. So I'm originally from Quebec City. So
do you root for the Colorado Avalanche at all?
For a couple of years, I rooted for Colorado Avalanche. It took me a while to root for Canadians.
Yeah. Will Quebec ever get another team? I miss the Nordiques.
I miss them too. It was interesting that Montreal-Quebec rivalry, but I doubt it. It's going to take a while still.
Yeah, it's a shame. Yeah. Maybe we can get, if Element AI can grow and become a behemoth, maybe you'll bring a team to Quebec. How about that?
Would be nice.
Deal?
Would be nice.
Deal.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Nicole.
Back at the 2019 AI and Analytics Conference held by Insurance Nexus, and I am with
Zahid Ansari.
And you are with
X by 2.
What is X by 2?
X by 2 is a technology consulting company, and we are putting the technology to work for the business and solving the challenges for the strategic goals. The company was founded 20 years back, and 20 years, and we have been helping our insurance insurers and other companies in healthcare as well.
Okay. So you gave a presentation yesterday, and what struck me about that was you had you tried to align the different goals. So you have like individual goals, department goals, organizational goals, and trying to pull them all together. What do you see, just from your experience, on companies that are able to do that? How do they think through the goals for the all of the complex layers of an organization? How do they think through it and then implement or execute a strategy so that all of the arrows are all aligned in one direction?
Right, so let me break it into two pieces where people can take actions. So the first thing I would say that we are already going, management as a whole in a company is already going through that alignment process. They keep doing it again and again, yearly reviews in terms of, hey, how you are doing and where we are heading and things like that, right? So that is those strategic goals, if they are not getting down from company level to division level to department level and so on, right? Then there is misalignment. But we do have some processes, right, through the reviews where they can be caught. Another place where you can see it a lot more visible is reports. So if you go to a dashboard that, let's say, an executive is looking at, and then you go to a divisional head, and you say, hey, AVP, VP, get the report from him or her, and then you go to a department, and then you say, sir, I would like to check your just managerial report. And then the kind of metrics that you find there, I'm pretty sure that you're gonna find your answers as to if you are truly aligned or not.
So where are you based out of?
We are in Detroit.
Okay. Tigers fan?
Tigers fan.
Baseball?
Baseball?
Yeah.
Why not?
Why not? What is your background?
So I come from analytics background, and that's what, so when I started kind of thinking about what to present, I got asked, hey, could you present something? And I'm like, what to present? What is the value that I can give to the audience? And one thing that popped up was, going from one company to the next, there is a common problem of connecting the dots between what the analytics is from the technology perspective versus what the analytics is from the business perspective. So how to tie the two? And
I'll interrupt there. Because I think you brought up an example yesterday of a travel app or something where you said, there's a flight. I'm going to take a flight.
Yeah.
And 75% of the time it's on time. And then you were just like, is that good? Should I be worried? And that struck me because it's not necessarily about data and analytics, but sometimes it's just, what's the right question? What are we trying to use the data and analytics for?
Correct. So to me, the analytics is that, by the way, not the 75% as a fancy number, rather something that can work for me, right? That's analytics.
Yeah.
So if we, in the name of analytics, if we are creating all different kind of statistics and producing just for use somewhere, without the true connection of that to what is going on in our organization? Why do we need this analytics? Whatever that product may be, the product may be a dashboard, a report, or ad hoc, or self-service, and things like that, right? So you're absolutely right. I mean, the numbers are out there, the reports are out there, the analytics is there. I will include AI and ML in there as well. I mean, they are doing their job. They are doing great things. But at the end of the day, right, as an executive or as a manager, I want to get to what works for me, not necessarily what has been introduced by the analytics department.
I think it's as simple as, is if my flight lands or is on time 75% of the time, is that good? Should I be worried?
Right.
Like, it's just keep digging deeper, ask the right questions, make it specific to your goals. So Zahid Ansari from X-By-2, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Back at the 2019 Insurance Nexus AI and Analytics Conference, and I am with
Dave Joel with GeoMap.
What is GeoMap?
GeoMap, we are a underwriting solution based in the geographical realm.
What does GIA stand for?
GIA stands for Geo-Inductive Analytics. It's the actual process of breaking down massive information, putting it through an actual human interaction to come out with reasonable decisions.
Okay. Why did you start GMM?
I worked in the insurance industry for about 25 plus years and started when I was 3 years old, so I'm now in my 30s.
It's in your DNA?
There you go, absolutely. So I worked on the underwriting side intensely, the Western United States, and got really into CAT. But none of the tools that were out there really spoke to me as a business holder, as a stakeholder. They didn't speak to me, and they didn't come from the insurance side. So I created my own when I worked at a company, and then really decided that's what I wanted to do, was to build models for companies and really custom build them for each company, because each company is totally unique, so their maps shouldn't look identical.
Yeah.
And their products shouldn't look identical. So I wanted to create a hazard that really worked with any size company, whether it was a cover holder with Lloyd's of London or a very big admitted company, and be flexible enough to work with each of them, get to know them, and really help them.
Yeah. But so what was your academic background?
My academic background? Well, I was born and bred in insurance. Insurance is my background.
So how did you learn the skill set to do the analytical part of geospatial technology?
Just working in the industry, really. And I'm not
self-taught.
I'm not a cartographer. We really are a company that has built everything from the insurance perspective. So really, it started at a company I was with when I decided, I had the harebrained idea that since I couldn't find what I needed in the geospatial industry, I'd make it. So I started just through trial and error, and really working on what didn't work and what did work, building different models, finding different ways to do things until I found something that really helped. It was a very rudimentary project. It was just table to table reading at that time, very simplistic. But what I envisioned was something much more robust. So after leaving the corporate side, being able to start completely greenfield and saying not what are my limits, what can I build, but what's my vision and what ultimately do I want to take this map to? So it was not only having an AP product that was a very vibrant visual map, it was also getting AI involved and getting API involved, mm-hmm. and being mobile. Because as an underwriter and manager, I'd be out in the field and want to talk about a risk, but really need to get back to my desk to check everything. Well, having a mobile tool in hand to not only look at risk, but also when CAT events come up, be able to have all that CAT information that's out there geospatially put against my risk on my product, yep. in my phone, to me was the ultimate thing. Yep. So why wouldn't I deliver that for my clients?
Yeah. Do you have any stories of success or pride from GMAP where you went above and beyond?
Well, really where we excel is during live CAT events. Really connecting with our clients. So we have a philosophy with involving the book of business from the client. We call it saturation, not concentration, because really concentration's been kind of hijacked by the industry. Concentration used to be, hey, don't have 10 homes on one street. And we used to have a Thomas guide and draw little circles as to where we had risks. But concentration now is more zip code, county, it's company level, it's underwriting company level. So we go to saturation. And we ingrain that across the spectrum of our maps, and we allow multiple different types of saturations. So when wildfires come out, the book of business is already there, but some companies can't update their books as often. We have what's called API Policy Bridge, where we can update as often as a company wants. If they want overnight policies brought in, we can do that. Some of our companies are not that sophisticated. So getting their book of business as fresh as we can during those events and getting them instantaneously in the map so they can see where their risks are, not only where their risks may be in danger, but where they can interact with their clients. And because we're policy number based, they can look up their clients, email their clients, phone their clients, remind them of what they need to do in those CAT events, and really be proactive. And we have clients that are doing that now. And see that as the way to be. It's not just assessing the risk. It's not just underwriting. Claims needs that information. And marketing needs that information. The admin and executives, everyone needs that information. Yeah. But we can actually now help as those heat indexes pop up on the map. Fires are breaking out. We can now warn clients and remind them of what they need to do to be prepared. We can see the floods coming and remind them to move their autos to higher levels. We can interact with them in ways we haven't been able to before. And to me, that's the ultimate, is when I see my clients use the map, not only for what I envision, but taking it to levels that I didn't envision. And that's the greatest success.
Yeah. So what's GMAP like when a cat event is occurring? Because I would think something like, it's one thing for a hurricane when it's slowly approaching the coast. You kind of have to check in every once in a while. But with a wildfire or a flood, it's active and it's dramatically changing. And hurricanes are more like straight line stuff, whereas floods and wildfires are moving in different directions. It must be chaotic over at GMAP.
And let's talk about wildfire a bit and what we do for that. So the old way of doing business is to, when there's a fire, to moratorium zip codes. And we have that ability. We have all the zip codes loaded, and they can see where the heat indexes are and where the fire perimeters are, and set a moratorium.
Do people actually try to write policies that the fire's coming?
Yes. And we have a client who expressly came to us because smoke was coming over the horizon, and someone bound, it's a direct company, they bound a policy as the fire was approaching. There's nothing they could do. Well, with our system, what we can do is we have an API where essentially all those heat indexes are turned into API information, so they can actually stop policies from being bound before the underwriters even know there's an event if it pops up. Further, we have the ability to map out what's going on and put what we call a GIA event on it. So this is where GIA gets really hectic. So we can draw a polygon over an area and say, this is where we think the fire is, even before the heat indexes pop up. Even before the fire perimeter is up, we can say, from everything we're seeing on the news, Twitter, whatever feed we're following, this is where the fire is. As soon as we draw that event, the moratorium's already in place on their system. Their system's gonna ping us on a new risk. It's gonna be within how many ever miles they set as their moratorium, because at GIA, we're about what the company needs, and that moratorium's in place. And the only thing I warn them is, there's what I call event fog. We're putting our best estimate out there as to where that event is. Hopefully we'll get as close as possible, but sometimes the news report, if you've ever been part of a real news story and you see where the reporters say what's going on and then what actually is going on, sometimes it can be very different. So we tell them to allow for a wide berth and allow for mistakes. We're trying something that no one's doing, and that's either genius or...
I think in this case, being conservative is the right approach.
Absolutely. We do too, and we're working with insurance companies, so that's generally
speaking. I don't think precision should play too much of a factor. It's better to be safe than sorry.
Absolutely. We're kind of banking on that. We're hoping we get it as close as possible, and we are going to be conservative in those estimates, but we're trying to help the company so that if a fire breaks out at 6 p.m. on a Friday night, we've at least got the tag there, and their system is then halted. So you can't have, and you can run your auto against it too. You don't want people adding comp as the fire is heading towards their
house. Raising their limits, lowering their deductibles.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Or binding their home.
Yeah.
As we had this client, and you know, if we can save a couple of cars, a couple of houses, we've paid for the mapping many times over. But we've got a client who understands. We care deeply about their business because we've been those risk managers. I've been the guy in the captain's chair when everyone in the organization is saying, what's our exposure? The tool is built for that very moment. And then it's built for beyond that, the claims adjusters have the houses there. We're a mobile tool. So if the claims adjuster is out in the field and they see the home, they can click on it, get driving directions like that, and they'll be out at the home and they'll have the policy number and information that they give to us. Yeah.
Do you have any opinion on cyber cannabis farms?
I do. I do. I've learned that it's a really easy product in Canada and less so here in the United States. That's what I've learned here at this conference.
Okay. Yeah.
That exact
thing. Yeah.
We have no mapping of cannabis farms, but we're now greatly considering it.
Yeah. I'm glad I brought that to your attention.
And the icons. Let me tell you, the icons we could roll out would be fantastic.
The palm trees.
Exactly.
David Joel, thank you.
Thank you.
I am back at the 2019 Insurance Nexus AI and Analytics Conference. And who are you?
I'm Davila, the marketing team for Insurance Nexus.
And you are?
I'm Marcia Irving. I'm sponsorship and exhibition at Insurance Nexus.
Okay, so at this conference, let me ask you first question. Are you tired?
No, I'm not. I had my coffee. Now I'm good.
Are you tired?
I'm very happy it's day two.
While they're yawning, they're answering that question. So Dovila and
Marsha.
Sorry, I was going to say Martha.
That happens.
Are two important cogs in making something like this happen. And I want to give the audience a flavor of what it takes to get a conference like this up and running. For the 2019 AI Insurance and Analytics Conference, when did you first start planning for it?
2018.
When?
Oh, the exact date. So I think, well, we always have the thought of back in your head when you're planning already 2018 event, you're thinking ahead of 2019, how it's gonna look.
Has to be.
Yeah.
We started basically on the days of the event in 2018.
So for this event, you're already planning next year's event?
Definitely. So a lot of the conversations we have on site are about next year's plans.
Okay. And so what are those conversations like? Give the audience a flavor of what they may not notice when they come to an event that you have to be very specific and cognizant about.
Maybe pass this one on Marsha too.
Well, we have to listen to all the conversations that are happening in all the rooms. We need to make sure that we're understanding what people are really thinking about and looking for future, to get a sense of the initial planning. It's also good to know if people want to come back, which we've been getting a lot of positive responses for. Okay. So those are some of the main things that we'll start off with.
Yeah. And so for like next year's conference, when will you start the marketing push?
So obviously then you also speak with people, where do they find out about the event, and then you're thinking, okay, this is the strategy I'm going to include in my 2020 strategy plan. But we'll start with our past delegates seeing also where would they want to see the event being marketed. But in marketing, I would obviously work with insurance nerds to
get course.
Work, of course, our main partners. So do more of like podcasts and fun interviews, just engage maybe a little bit more with like people that are attending our events, our speakers and sponsors, just so, because they're the best people to give a bit of like a flavor of our events.
Can I ask, what is so special about Chicago that Insurance Nexus generally gravitates towards Chicago for its US events?
We would love to have it somewhere else, to be honest. We've tried multiple times. We survey the audience to see what they want, and the insurers love Chicago. They think it's an easy place for them to come to. They can get sign-off and approvals easier to come to Chicago. So yep. We think Chicago it is.
I agree.
We have Siri joining the interview.
And we have Siri joining the interview. Edit. Note to self, edit. Chicago is great. So thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for having me part of the session. And where are you going on vacation after this?
Home. We have another conference in 2 weeks that we're going to in Amsterdam. So no rest for the wicked.
And then where are you going on vacation?
I am going to Cape Verde end of June. So I'm looking forward to that.
So you never rest.
At Cape Verde, I will sleep a little bit.
Sleep a little bit, okay. And where are you going on vacation?
We're staying in Chicago until Monday, and then I'm going to Italy to rest in the sun after rain in Chicago.
molto bene. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you.